President Trump is on his way to North Carolina. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News.
We're going to get it fixed up. Should have been done months ago from the hurricane that took place almost 4 months ago.
The president talking to reporters as he left the White House a short time ago. Fox's Jackie Heinrich is in Asheville.
This community is still picking up the pieces as the president comes to visit. Businesses all over are in ruins. There's still rubble everywhere. More than a million cubic yards of debris have already been collected, but officials haven't touched the waterways yet.
From North Carolina, President Trump will head to the Los Angeles area to survey a wildfire disaster he says was made worse by water mismanagement.
But they didn't let the water flow, and they still haven't for whatever reason. So I think we're going to have a very interesting time.
But Democratic California Governor Gavin Newsom calls that water talk misinformation. And though he and the president have not discussed today's tour, Newsom says he plans to greet the Trump arrival. One more thing President Trump talked about this morning, the Senate confirmation vote, perhaps tonight, for Pete Hegseth, his defense secretary nominee.
Pete's a very, very good man. I hope he makes it.
It would take four Republicans to join Democrats who adamantly oppose Hegseth, claiming he's unqualified amid sexual misconduct and alcohol abuse allegations Hegseth denies. But only two GOP senators are a no at this point, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. The Trump White House says federal immigration raids nationwide have rounded up 538 criminal illegal immigrants. Democratic mayors in so-called sanctuary cities still plan to resist. Brandon Johnson in Chicago says,
"We will defend our city. It's just that simple."
Republican Senator Bernie Moreno just reacted, telling Fox,
"I think he's looking to get the prize as the stupidest, most ineffective mayor in American history. He's there already. He's just going for extra credit."
We're just getting word out of Russia from leader Vladimir Putin. He's opened the talks on the Ukraine war, but adds it's complicated. This after President Trump's threats on tariffs and sanctions on Russia if Putin doesn't work out a deal to end the war. America's listening to Fox News.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as a dollar a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at getethos.com. That's getethos.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code SECONDFREE by January 26th. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional...
Good morning. From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Scott Gross. New information on the officer-involved shooting in the foothills. On Wednesday, U.S. Marshals served an arrest warrant when gunfire followed. 48-year-old David McKinney of Tucson was killed when officers returned fire. McKinney was wanted for a double homicide out of Tucson. A person who lives in the neighborhood shared this message to those involved in causing the chaos.
They are the ones that brought this pain to this neighborhood. These people are not victims. This neighborhood is the victim.
No injuries to law enforcement or other community members were reported. The deputies involved in the shooting have been placed on modified duty. And the family of Jacob Sims, whose remains were found in a burn pile, will hold a memorial service this Saturday. Family and friends are still searching for answers and justice for Jacob.
Jacob needs help. Jacob deserves justice.
The memorial service will be held at Desert Valley Mortuary in Somerton from 1 to 3. I'm Scott Gross.
Forecast for the weekend starts with 67 and sunny for today, 41 overnight tonight, 70 and sunny tomorrow, 46 tomorrow night, 10-mile-per-hour winds, and a nice Sunday, too, sunny and 69, 47 on Sunday night.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr. Wealth Advisor.
Let's do it. Good morning, Yuma Money Talk, AM560 KBLU. Derek Hagerberg, branch manager with Mortgage One. In studio, Russ Clark. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Did you try? You really tried to get me with Tone Loc?
Yes,
come on.
I tried.
You're not going to get me with any of these. Are you serious?
Well, I tried to fix up. Maybe it's a little off for you, but maybe.
No, sorry.
Didn't get there.
Not going to happen. So you just handed me, you know, I felt like a news anchor. This just in.
It's actually old. I just didn't catch it.
It's old, what? 12 hours ago, 20 hours ago?
It came out on January 20th. It was an executive order from January 20th. But it wasn't one of the ones they highlighted.
Okay.
I didn't read it right away. And I said, well, Derek would be interested in this. It's an emergency price relief for American households.
And what is it talking about? It's talking about deregulation because of overregulation, and all of those items add costs to the construction
and
housing. And
they're estimating $50,000 in costs on the average. I don't know if that's true, but that's what
I could say we could go down that rabbit hole and think of it this way. What's the regulation on fuel to get lumber to the job site? What's the regulation on fuel surcharges to
There's a lot. Taxes and surcharges and price of fuel is, what, 40-50% higher than it was a few years ago?
Well, not only that, but you go to the pump, and what's the per-gallon charge for...
In Arizona, for gas, it's like 30 cents, a little over 30
cents. And
I think
in California, it's, what, 69 cents a gallon?
No, it's over a buck, I think.
So when you say it could be 50,000, look at the regulations that have put on HVAC units. Look at whether it's the carpet and the recyclability of carpet and flooring.
Well, EPA regulations and everything. Mm-hmm.
So I could look at that and say, yeah, you could probably add up $50,000 worth of regulatory items. In addition to, we just talked about Fannie and Freddie. Okay, so Fannie and Freddie do charge an additional amount that goes back into them that is a fee, if you will, a federal item that is charged. So not only is there fees in the lending, there's fees in the items coming over to the job site, there's EPA regulations. I mean, on some of these homes, I could say it might be more than 50.
Yep.
So, okay, you reduce the overregulation, then you could bring down the cost of the construction. You're not trying to squeeze the contractors who might only have a 5 or 10% profit margin. I don't know. You know, it varies. But if you could drop that price, sure. Now, what this does hint at, though, and contrary to what we're talking about with Katie Hobbs's suggestion, if
keep
you will.
Keep the regulations, keep all that, but we'll give you money to put down on the house, which actually puts more money in the system in the wrong way.
But we talked about it that in 2024, that was the lowest number of unit sales in the United States since 1995.
Okay.
So to give more people money isn't going to get more homes sold because there's not enough houses on the market. There's not enough houses in the inventory. And you go back and look at the last 5 to 6 years with building permits pulled and new construction. No, we do have a supply issue. It's not a critical mass because interest rates are high. If interest rates were low, I think we would have a supply issue that's already past critical mass. So I think this is a great idea if you could cut out some of the regulation and, you know, again, some of the stupid regulation. What is your take on the rest of this?
Well, I think it's good for a lot of reasons. The fact that he's making a language of emergency, the fact that he's saying what he wants done, it's going to get people in his circle scrambling to find ways to make it happen, to make it cheaper, to make it $50,000 cheaper, cutting EPA regulations, cutting different government agency. You know, to build a house is not an easy thing. The permits, the amount of work that needs to get done to get the land prepped and exactly right, and red tape and oversight. I'm sure there's a lot of corners that could be cut that would not harm the community or an environment.
Well, I don't even know if it's corners that are cut. I would hate to say it that way, but you look at just simply the cost to, let's go back to getting the supplies. How many different hoops and regulations need to be gone through to get, let's say, drywall made, then shipped? Or, the flooring, the carpet's made, and then shipped and regulated and tested. Okay, I don't want to cut corners, but at the same time, you can see some of the charges are just silly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like it. Let's see what, I'm hopeful, but let's see what happens, because obviously saying let's get rid of the regulation and getting rid of the regulation are two different things.
But it's such a different approach than like Hobbs.
But it should
Hobbs said it's too expensive, we're going to give you money.
Which?
They say it's too expensive, we are going to find ways to get
to make it cheaper.
To get the cost out.
Which I'm pretty sure everybody went through an economics class somewhere.
At some point.
Okay. Supply and demand. Build more supply, now you can lower the prices. Mm. Offer more money for free, you're going to increase the demand. That can't drop the price of a home.
No.
You know, I mean, let's get any grade school, junior high, high school, college level professor, economics. Let's talk about that. Which one would actually benefit the community as a whole?
Let me ask you, though. Do you believe if Katie Hobbs was in here right now and you said that to her, she would just look at you like you don't know what you're talking about?
Probably. But at the same time, I'm not, you know, again, it's not besmirching anybody's character. It's just literally the economics of supply and demand. If you and I, and let's pretend you and I and Johnny, all three of us are sitting here, and there's one red Mustang out in the parking lot, and all three of us kind of want a Mustang, and somebody came in and handed Johnny $100,000 extra, would he outbid you and I for that car?
Yeah.
Cool. So the price just went up. Now, if you told me we made some extra Mustangs and there's four red Mustangs out there and there's only three of us, what happens to the cost?
Goes down.
Way down. So it's not a, you know, it's a great talking point from a plan, but in terms of sustainability.
It's a cheap way out of just trying to win public favor. It's not really a solution to the problem as much as it is that, you know, she's going to look good political because she at least tried to help. Even if it was a bad program.
Yeah. And again, that's been a talking point that multiple politicians have used. And again, there's down payment assistance programs out there. You don't have to give X amount of dollars because you already have access to X amount of dollars. There's at least a half a dozen programs I could put somebody into right now that they would have the down payment. So what's the reason to give them extra money? Oh, to let them
outbid
political capital. That's all it is.
It's political capital.
So that's a good one. We can talk about that for years and years. Mm-hmm. However, let's not talk about that.
Go ahead.
Okay. What is the 17th of, technically some people call it the 15th, some people call it the 17th of January, which we just passed?
I don't know. Valentine's Day.
No, that's in February. Come on. Helen have to have a talk. No, it's National Quitters Day.
Oh.
That's literally the day that most New Year's resolutions disappear.
Oh, okay.
And now you go back to the same routines and habits.
All right.
And, you know, again, it's interesting that I hope it's not on your list. But, you know, you have some of these conversations with people that say, you know, I want to buy a home next year. Wait, why not this year? We're only in January. Well, I have some credit work to do and I have some other things to do. And I need another year to work on this. Why? Just let's work on it right now today. Let's just focus on what these small habits are and just move ahead. Did you find it, National Quitters Day?
Second Friday of January.
There. And you thought I was joking. Come on.
I didn't know it existed.
You get me on that and you try to get me on tone luck. What is wrong with you?
I trust you, but verified. So right. It actually would have been the 10th.
Yeah, you're right.
Because 3rd was the first Friday and then the 10th.
So
second Friday. I didn't know it existed. I had to fact check you.
Isn't that interesting, though, that we have a day that is the quote-unquote National Quitters Day for people with New Year's resolutions?
People abandon their New Year's resolutions by the second Friday in January.
Why is that?
Well, they say it's
the weekend's coming.
It's a symbolic milestone for the struggle to maintain New Year's resolution.
So think of...
Wow, that's horrible.
It is. Now, think of all of the things that we could be doing and should be doing that would lead us to a way better, prosperous future, whether it's this week, this month, this year, this decade. A little bit of savings, a little bit of budgeting, and every customer who walks in, I'm pulling out the personal family budget.
Yeah.
Let's just go through one page. Do you have an idea of what you need to make to cover your current bills? Do you know what you need to make so you can put some money away? And I don't care what money away is. Could be $50 a month, could be $100 a month, could be $1,000 a month.
I just need to spend $1,000 more than I make. That's a...
But how many people do that?
A lot.
Go back to...
A lot. That's why we got credit cards going crap past, what, $1.3 trillion.
But credit cards, we talked about this last week. They still have not updated fourth quarter results of total credit card balances. So the New York Fed's, their report still is Q3. Why? I mean, you literally, if the credit bureaus can sell your information and my information in 3 seconds, if I run your credit right now, you know you would have 100 other people calling you because that data was released instantaneously for people who want to do what's called trigger leads. Agreed?
Yep.
So if a company can pay for that data instantaneously, why can't the Fed actually compile that data and tell us what the fourth quarter credit card balances are?
Yep, they're only still giving the third quarter. That's it.
You thought I was kidding.
Again, the trust but verify.
But, and again, if we know credit card balances are going up and we know that people in general don't necessarily pay attention to the basics of the one-page form, it's not that difficult. However, it is work and it is monotonous and it is a little bit scary sometimes, not unlike seeing Russ Clark in the gym.
Yeah, that's very scary.
Okay, but you still go.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Why do you go every day?
Because I'm still alive.
Okay, and you changed your mindset, and that's
And that's it. I changed mindset.
And that's the New Year's resolution, National Quitters Day. Just don't quit. Dream big. Let's go. You could do any of these, but you got to start with a dollar. And then $2, and then $50, and then $100. And that's, you know, my son and I were talking on the way here, and he was telling me, you know, Dad, I'm still following your plan. I'm still taking 10% off the top of my check, and it's going into savings. But he actually just got a raise. So I said, cool, bud. Do you remember this 10% second?
10% goes up.
Do you remember that second part of the conversation? He goes, no. Like, listen to me. I said, okay, cool. Whatever that raise is, figure out what portion of that raise you want to move into savings as well. And he goes, well, what do you mean? I said, if you got a $3 an hour raise, could you take 10% plus a little bit more? I mean, if you said $3, take a dollar, take a third of the raise and move that into savings as well and keep the other $2 an hour and just move ahead. So now you're not at 10%, you might be at 12% or 11.5%, whatever that is. Just every time you get a raise in life, put a little bit more away.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have more money to spend. He goes, Dad, I'd have more money in savings. No kidding, ding dong. You absolutely would. But it's that, hey, at least he's listened. So we talked about it. You know, maybe they'll have a plain dirt graveyard for me and a pine box and that's it. But at least you've got some money saved up and it's okay. But it's that going ahead where it's amazing how many customers come in and they don't see that they should save first and spend second. They spend first and save second. How long did it take you to learn that in life? When did you think you learned that?
I started it in high school.
Okay, because you ran into a mentor, a teacher, or what?
It actually was high school classes and balancing checkbooks and all that kind of stuff that stuck with me. And when I got married at the young age of 20... I had a check.
That was like a half a decade ago.
Yeah, more than that. But but it was nearly 50 years ago. But I had a checkbook and I also had credit card or a debit card and all that. And I would in nothing digital then. I would handwrite if I used my credit card, I'd handwrite and deduct it from my balance. So that money was already taken out of my balance mentally. So that when my credit card bill came in, I cut the check, and then I could just check off where I'd already deducted it.
Super easy.
But I started doing that at 21.
And you didn't even have any points or cash back or any of those other goofy things to do it. It was just what you did.
Well, I never wanted to come up short. I never wanted to pay interest. But you know, I was always frugal.
Why?
I don't know. But, well, I've been on my own financially since I was about 14. Like if I wanted to buy school clothes and stuff, I got money from a TV guide route and delivering newspapers.
Would you have been considered the best dressed in high school?
No, I was frugal on that too.
Just curious.
But I bought my own car at the age of 15. It was $850. And, you know, and I knew I had to save and I had to work. And I worked, you know, for a Superior Court judge. And, you know, at the age of 14, cleaning up properties that he owned and stuff, that odd jobs. And every weekend, I was with him every weekend. And I saved every dime. I mean, I kept saving and putting money aside.
Do you believe every human being on this planet can do that?
Of course.
So what's the difference?
In our environment, what we're used to, and I'm worried about that because my kids grew up with plentiful around. You know, we belonged to the country club. I owned a business. I had an airplane and a fleet of 20 cars. And I literally could get them reasonably what they wanted. But I made them work.
In what way? In the business, around the house?
Both.
Okay.
You know, and even my daughter, when she went to college, she still had to work. So she went to work at Texas Roadhouse as a waitress because I wasn't going to foot the whole bill. She had to have skin in the game. And she ended up becoming the manager of Texas Roadhouse, which she is today. Even she's back at it. And she's making a great living.
And she and I have talked, and she does the savings, and she budgets. So clearly you've had an influence there, so good job.
Yeah. Well, she's tripped and fell at times, and I've had to bail her out, and we talk.
Look, just you and I can admit this. We both have tripped, fallen.
Yeah.
Everybody has. Everybody sees the perfection of the moment. They don't see the pain of the previous 20 years. I don't care who you are. You know, you look around, and you see some of the most affluent people in this community. I promise you that they've had trip-ups, slip-ups, or huge issues. And sometimes the people that you think are the most polished and successful, they're not.
My son puts his whole paycheck in savings. He's in the Air Force. And he's overseas. He pays no income tax. That's why he stays overseas. Because if he comes home, he has to pay income tax. So he hasn't been home or been stationed at home for like 10 years. He always volunteers to stay overseas so he doesn't pay income tax.
I like it.
He's probably got enough money in savings to retire today, and he's not 40.
Which, again, if he invested that and let that
continue to go, and
he's going to work for, what, another 10, 20?
Well, he's a colonel now, he's a lieutenant, and he's going the colonel route. So he's
minimum five more.
Yeah, so he may work till he's 45 or 50 at the most. You know, through the military, and who knows what he does after that.
Which, and again, let's go back to the rule of 72. You know, again, pick a number. If you got a 7.2% return on your investment, you're telling me what he has in savings today would double in 10 years.
Correct.
Right? Okay. So, great. You've got enough to retire today. Let's work 10 more years and increase your military pension and double your savings minimum and just let this thing snowball.
You see, Kevin Tunnell's asked me if I'm saying my son does not pay taxes because he's overseas. True.
True.
Yeah, and that's a military thing.
Mm-hmm. When you were stationed overseas.
He's stationed overseas, so he doesn't have to pay income tax. I don't know why that is, but not only that, he gets extra pay for hazard duty pay or something and all that. And on a colonel's salary, I think that's pretty good.
Right. Kevin would know that. He's former military.
He does know that. He's a Marine.
Testing him or what?
He's testing me.
Got it. So, you know, again, here it is, National Quitters Week Day just this last week. Here's all I hope to have is everybody knows that everybody is certainly in the United States, but I think globally could, but here in the U.S., you could retire after 20, 30, 40 years worth of a working career with four or five houses, with money in a 401k or a retirement plan, whether it's an IRA, a 401k, just a money market account.
We all make choices.
You can. And, you know, I've made dumb choices with purchases before, and I've made emotional, you know, jumps to go buy things. And at the same time, you think, how many people don't look at the cost of what they're spending in terms of a 30-day window or a 60-day window or a 90-day window? If I said, hey, Russ, how much do you spend on... And pick something. I know you don't smoke, but what does the average smoker spend to smoke?
What is $100 a carton for 10 packs? And I know people smoke two packs a day, so $100 every 2 days, let's say $300 a week.
You know. I one of my very good friends, both she and her husband smoke. And again, I don't care. You guys can smoke all you want. This is not a no smoking thing. It's whether it's smoking or coffee
They're spending $12,000-$15,000 a year.
It's about $14 for a pack of cigarettes, because I looked in Circle K when I went in one time. And she and her husband both smoke a pack a day. So pretty good at math. That's about $30 a day. Mm-hmm. And if you did that 7 days a week, pretty good. There's $210 a week. Yeah. You're $850 a month or more in just cigarettes.
Yeah.
But she'll tell me, you know what? I can't afford to go do X. Well, you can. You just choose.
You just spent $10,000 on cigarettes.
In a year. And again, I don't care. You want to smoke? I support you. That's freedom of choice. You do you. No. But don't tell me you don't have the money to put money in your 401k when you're choosing to do that. I've made the same stupid choices. Back, you know, years ago, I loved taking my kids over to iFly. You ever done the indoor skydiving things?
No.
Oh, one of the funnest things you've ever done.
They don't have one in Yuma.
Well, they do, but you and I can't get there. YPG,
I've been in that one.
Okay, well, then you've been in one.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's two in San Diego. There's one in Phoenix.
Vegas, I'm sure, has a lot of them.
One of the most fun things you can do. And, you know, believe it or not, it's cheaper if you just buy an hour's worth of the tunnel time and then hire their coach for an hour versus just paying their 30-second, 60-second increments. But you got to buy the hour. So, you know, a couple times I went over and bought my kids and I the hour worth of time, and that's about $1,500.
Wow.
Okay, guys, we just went to San Diego and spent an hour in iFly and had lunch. And the gas back and forth, that's like a lot of money. There, you know, that's $1,800. We're not doing this every weekend. That is not going to happen. But it was a treat because we had saved up other money. I had the money saved before we did it.
It was in the budget.
Oh, my gosh. Let's go put this on a credit card and pay 29.99% interest on it. You're getting another text. I can see you fact-checking me on something else. But again, I don't care, truthfully. I don't care what people spend their money on. So, you know, when I talk to people, we always joke about the financially naked and seeing people raw. Look, it doesn't matter. It's not judgmental. I just told everybody I spent $1,500 on an iFly thing. To some people, that's going to be stupid. To me, that was a couple times. That was a good memory with the kids. My youngest loved it. You know, just fun. And it's a good memory. And yet, you know, good friend of mine spends $10,000 on cigarettes. She would look at me and say, you know, you just spent probably $4,000 that year to go to iFly.
Mm.
And she thinks I'm dumb. And I can say, you're dumb because you spend $10,000 on cigarettes.
iFly's healthier.
Yeah, as long as you don't come down fast. But, you know, it is. It was a ton of fun. Yeah. And that was difficult to, I don't want to say budget for, but here's the difficult part is, okay, these monies are going into savings and investing. This is additional monies for fun. Putting the money away first and then go doing the trip as opposed to going to do the trip and then coming up with how you pay for the credit cards.
Right.
And I think that's the other thing that from a budgeting perspective, it's amazing the balances that I see on some people that literally are riding the edge of the razor blade from collapse. And if I said, what do you think the average that I see household credit card total is? Dollars.
About $8,000.
Keep going.
10?
I'd say it's probably in the 12 to 13,000.
Yeah, I said that's above average.
And it is.
Yeah.
But think of it this way. The typical 30-year-old, 30 to 35-year-old that is now getting out of college, has established a job, wants to get into a house. Have they worked a lot to put together assets? No. You know, whether it's washer, dryers, refrigerators, or the trips and we're out of the house. It's amazing how, in my opinion, the younger first-time buyers or the first move up, if you will, have more credit card debt than a seasoned person. I would call you a seasoned person.
I've been called worse.
I know. But you've learned and what was, if I said, hey, Russ, what do you think the highest credit card debt you ever had in a month was? in your lifetime.
In 1 month?
In one, at a moment in time, if I looked, what was the highest balance total you think you carried?
I probably 10,000 in 1 month because I was starting a business and I needed to throw some equipment.
Only 10,000 total?
Yeah.
Okay. And you'd never carried a balance ever other than that?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I only started carrying a balance when I started this business, and I carried it for like a year or so, and I got it all paid off.
So the most I've ever seen is about 100.
1,000?
Yeah. Imagine the juggling to carry that prior to filing bankruptcy. And again, this person, you know, he was asking me how to do certain things, and clearly I can't make a legal determination to say, you need to go do this, you need to go do that.
Yeah.
What we did talk about is, here's what you have the ability to do with your house, and you could pull out about, I think back then it was 40, maybe 45,000. So you're not even going to get half of the debt paid off. You need to go back and do that soul searching, because happy to do that for you, but if you're still struggling with the other $50,000 to $55,000 worth of credit card debt, I don't know that putting half of it on your home is the way to go. I really don't. But you need to go do that soul searching and then come back. He didn't. Did find out there was a bankruptcy later, which candidly I'm happier about, because he didn't stick 50 grand on his home still to pay back later. But you think, what was it that took him, and how long did it take him to get?
Not overnight.
No.
It took a while.
That's a long
time.
I'm
doing the wrong thing over again, not having an exit strategy.
Okay, tell me what an exit strategy is to you. But before you do that, we're going to do an exit strategy, because we're going to take a commercial break, because I know you keep looking at the screen. We'll talk about your exit strategy after this exit strategy. This is AM 560 KBLU.
To enjoy a longer, productive retirement, you need an investment portfolio that continues to work for you. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management specializes in solid financial advice. Whether you require low volatility, liquid assets, or longer-term investments for higher returns, it's important to discuss your options with a financial advisor. Schedule a consultation with Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management today. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors. Given recent events in the financial markets, doesn't a second opinion make sense for your financial well-being? If you've been questioning your investment plan that you have in place, Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management would like to help by offering a free, no-obligation consultation to review your financial affairs. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors.
Hey, Yuma Money Talk, AM 560 KBLU, Derek Egeberg, branch manager with Mortgage One, Russ Clark in studio. And Russ was just talking about his exit strategy.
Yeah,
tell me what that means.
When I put money on the credit card to help to get the business going, I knew I wasn't going to keep it on there. I knew that I was going to pay it down. I knew that the interest I was paying was going to be charged back to the business also, which I took took the loan out for the business, and they paid me back for all of it and all that. But I knew I had to expire that before we started pulling profits or anything or buying any additional.
So you items. Made the determination, this is how I'm going to get into trouble and how I'm going to get out of trouble, and it was a calculated decision.
Correct.
And that's
in order to promote the business, we needed some equipment. It was equipment buys, car lifts and stuff like that.
So where you're going with that is, you know, everybody says, oh, my gosh, real estate's scary. Oh, my gosh, these things are scary. Now, I'm going to give you the asterisks. I'm comfortable with certain things. You're comfortable with certain things. But the exit strategy, when I always tell people, hey, play Monopoly. You know, you start on Go and you buy your first home, and 3 to 5 years later, you buy another one. You turn the corner on the board and you turn the first one into a rental property, right?
Right.
3 to 5 years later, you buy another home, so you're up by free parking. You're turning the corner again, but you turn number two into a rental. And if you went around the board one time over, let's say, 20 to 30 years, and you had four homes, what are the exit strategies? Well, first and foremost, if I bought a home 10 years ago, is it probably worth more today?
Yeah.
Okay. So I know it's probably appreciated and I could sell it at or below market to get out of it. If I bought it 10 years ago, what's the likelihood rents have gone up over a 10-year period?
About a 99% chance.
Okay. So if I needed to, I could rent it below market and make sure that it was rented all the time as another exit strategy so I don't have to cover it.
That's a great strategy because if you get the right renter and somebody that really wants that lifestyle, that's their budget, that's what they want to do, mm-hmm. and they're going to maintain it and treat the house with integrity, mm-hmm. man, yeah.
So those two, I can rent cheaper if I needed to. I could sell cheaper if I needed to.
Right.
But it's also getting paid off by somebody else. So I don't have any fear or risk there because I'm already thinking about the exit strategies. Now, if I owned a 100-unit apartment building, is that as saleable as a single-family home?
No.
In my opinion. And no. Again, my opinion. No.
Well, no, it's a specialized buyer. It's a small cluster of buyers that are doing those kinds of things. I mean, they're out there.
There
they
are.
Buy and sell
there
them
are.
Every day.
And you could sell anything you really could.
Yeah.
And you also know I own a couple classic cars.
Yeah.
Now, do I have an exit strategy for those? I love them.
Well,
they're emotional.
They're always worth something.
But I didn't buy them straight on emotion. I bought them because, you know what, these two, I love driving them, and they're fun. But at
right.
the same time, I believe I got a good deal on them, and I believe if I needed to, I could probably sell them reasonably quick for a reasonable amount of money
right.
and have an exit strategy.
They're not really liquid, but they're
no,
not. They're not going to be a hard sell. It's not like selling an apartment complex.
No, and so again,
yeah, there's a market.
You look at when you say exit strategies. If you're going to take on debt for one reason or another, what was the strategy behind it? What's the reason to get out of it? And if it's, hey, we're going to go to Disneyland and we're putting $10,000 on a credit card, great. What's the strategy to get out of that before it's cost you 30% interest over a year?
Mm-hmm.
And now that $10,000 Disneyland vacation just cost you $13,000 or $14,000. I don't know what the strategy is. And some people have them and some people don't.
Is Disneyland expensive?
I don't know. I'm just saying if you went to the Disneyland hotel and you were there for a week and you did all the things, because I know you wouldn't be cheap. You wouldn't stay at the Motel 6 down the road.
You'd be
staying at, really? Come on.
Well, I've stayed on the property before. I mean, back when I was earning money, before I became radio guy, yeah.
But that was a choice.
Yeah.
And you probably knew how and why and what was going to happen.
Right.
That's all I'm saying is when we say the quitter, hey, Russ, are you going to quit working out this year?
No.
Why not?
I have another year commitment.
You already did it. You're already healthy. You don't need to do it anymore, right?
I've still got goals.
Which is?
I want to maintain a weight below 185. And, you know, like I used to be up to 260. Right now I'm at like 194.
Say 260 again.
260.
And everybody who's listening wants me to go, good grief, yeah. Russ.
I got documentation to prove it. But
put the cheeseburger down, Mr. Clark.
But it's a lifestyle change.
There is probably the truest statement that as we're doing these things for credit, for mortgage, for wealth building, for all of these things, it's just a lifestyle change.
Sure.
It doesn't matter to me whether you go get a cup of coffee, a pack of cigarettes, you know, out to lunch every day. I don't care. Good grief. Wow. You needed to put the whole box of Krispy Kreme donuts down. Goodness gracious.
Absolutely.
But at that time in your life, what were you focusing on?
Krispy Kreme.
Probably. You know, jelly-filled or whatever.
Well,
but what was the driving emotional force then?
At that point, I had I'd moved to Yuma to start the business with Napa. I was expanding quickly, growing quickly. I was growing at 30, 40% a year. And then I started doing radio at the same time. And I just always on the run. I ate when I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I didn't focus on health.
Is it harder to eat healthy?
No.
But you do have to think about it.
Correct.
And I think that's, you know, again, I've done the same thing.
Yeah, but to eat healthy is, once you fit the parameters on what that is to you, once you put those parameters in, it's not hard to stay within that guideline.
No, it's not. But no. There again is the discipline, the habit, the routine, which you go back to the document that has changed my life is that personal family budget. Just writing ones and zeros down on a piece of paper with a pencil and totaling them up and going, okay, I did good. I could have done better. Here's what I could squeeze out a little bit. Again, it's not that difficult to save $50 or $100 a month if you look at subscriptions or you look at just travel habits. And again, I know people that they'll literally go from their home to one store, take the stuff back, from their home to the next store, take the stuff back, versus, you know, okay, we got two or three stores to hit. Let's hit all three stores real quick. Because they have to do the grocery shopping first.
But you're talking like a guy. Guys just run and grab what they need and go right out. They don't shop.
No, or do I'm you, talking you shop? About, I shop, but I'm saying I know a couple of ladies that go do the grocery shopping first and then take the stuff home and then go to the mall and go get the stuff. No, you're wasting a few bucks in gas.
That's your operations manager in you.
Might be. Yeah. You know, who knows? But let's talk about some other things. Housing. Do you see homes going up in Yuma?
Yes.
Okay. Do you see more people coming from California?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think the fires are going to have an issue pushing even more people possibly this way?
Yeah, they don't have a home. So, okay. Yeah, it's time for them to sit down and make a decision on where we're going.
So one of the things that I get asked a lot is, and again, I don't have the crystal ball. I've got a pretty good one. It's a little fuzzy at times, but is there going to be a housing crash? Is there going to be a market crash? Should I wait for something to happen?
I don't know.
Why are you waiting for anything?
Yeah.
Really? But if you say, wait a minute, supply and demand, you just talked about it, and this executive order is hinting at it. There's not enough supply. There really isn't. And if you have people moving into an area, you're creating additional demand over just population growth. So if people are moving into the Yuma area and Arizona in general, but into the Yuma area, and we still have an affordable lifestyle here, do you see housing prices going to come down at all? I don't, but do you?
I don't. Trump would like for it to come down, and I think it may stop the escalation. You know, we're not going to go up 20%, hopefully.
And isn't it interesting, though, that mindset is the same people that have 20 million, not necessarily President Trump, but you look at, say, the New York market. How many apartments, which you and I would call a house, but they call them apartments. How many apartments in New York are in the high-rise buildings that are 8, 10, 12?
Millions. Millions.
$1 million. Is that affordable?
Not for what we do.
Not for what we do. So, you know, again, you can say, I'm trying to make housing affordable, but then you have to ask for whom and where. Because you're probably not going to be able to take those $30 million apartments, as they're called, in New York and make them more affordable. No. The people who are buying them don't want them to be affordable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, that's one of those things also. Remember when they were sending immigrants to other areas of the country and when they showed up in Martha's Vineyards, the people didn't really want them there?
That's an understatement. They were out in 24 hours because they had money, they had pull, and I don't want that eyesore in my neighborhood.
And it affected them personally.
Correct.
And so some of these things.
And they're all leftists that were screaming open borders because it's humane. But get out of my neighborhood. Get off my lawn.
Isn't that interesting that, again, it's rules for not for me. And you go down that road of saying, hey, let's make it more affordable. But are you looking what it's actually going to do to the community around you? Again, some of these things are going to make housing way more expensive. Some of them could make housing way more affordable in terms of cost to get in. Now, if I made a home $30,000 cheaper and the average home is, let's say, $300 here in Yuma.
10%.
10%. Yeah. Is that going to make you need to buy or want to buy?
No, but I'm going to feel good about looking to buy.
You're never even going to notice it.
Not me, but other people would.
Almost nobody's going to notice it. And I'm not saying either of the, you know, this program, I would love to see some of the regulations come out. But let's be brutally honest. If you could take $20,000 worth of stuff out of the price of a home.
It's a 10% sale.
What for every $10,000 right now with interest rates the way they are, it's about $60 a month. When you figure taxes, it might be $70.
I told you I'm a tightwad.
You are. Well, you're a tightwad, and you keep motioning me that we need to take another break. So, guys, the tightwad's going to cut me off here for a few minutes. This is Money Talk AM 560 KBLU.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they believe they manage money for their clients differently from many other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. Visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com and find out why investors switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
The opinions voiced in Money Talk with Tom Rush and George Davis Wealth are for general...
Scanning through the bathroom window, had to buy a silver spoon.
Hey, Yuma Money Talk, AM 560, Derek Eggerberg, branch manager with Mortgage One. And you know what? He got me. Yeah. I couldn't come up with a last name Cocker on that. I'm struggling with Joe, and it's like, oh, who is it? So... All right, you got me once in 2025. First time in what, 10 years?
Wow.
Jeez. All right. I'm going to bring in my own soundtracks next week. We're going to have some fun on this. talking about growth and opportunity and things that we could do, you know, again, very thankful that we've had a great run, moved over to Mortgage One. We've got some great things going. Local underwriting, local funding, still hiring. So, believe it or not, looking for a mortgage processor.
And, well, I'll be right over. Yeah. Put in that.
No, you have to be able to add without taking your shoes off.
I have to add?
No, you know what? When you have to count with your shoes off, that's not going to work. So, man. You're not it. But the beauty is still growing locally. And so, when you talk about, I think in the first segment, you asked about the industry. I'm always confident and optimistic with housing and what our industry is because, you know, the good people really do a good job and work hard. But if I wasn't confident in the industry, would I be hiring and committing more resources?
No.
No.
And not only that, you've got to look at what the next 6 months is going to bring, the next year. And there are times of ups and downs. So obviously you're looking at something positive.
Clearly, we've gone through the last couple of years that there were some downs. I mean, the market volume has gone down nationwide. You look at how many mortgage loan officers didn't even choose to renew their licenses this year.
That's not unusual in your industry, though.
No, it is very – it's telling of what the last year has been.
But it happened. You have cycles.
Sure, absolutely. So when rates are coming down and everybody feels like, oh, my gosh, look, I can go get into the business and it's no big deal, you have a bunch get in. And as soon as you actually have to work hard to do things,
as soon as you have to
people
work.
Get out. And so you see there's been tens of thousands of people nationwide that haven't renewed their MLO license. Same thing is happening with real estate agents. There's lots of people not renewing their licenses. Which, again, I'm kind of okay with because you get some of the part-timers out and you stick with the full-time people who know what's going on. But back to hiring, we wouldn't be hiring locally and continuing to grow if I didn't feel the market was going to continue doing very, very well. So, you know, you'd ask me that first segment. It's like, you know, we need to talk about that because investing and building is what proves your belief structure, right? If... let's say Panera Bread that just built the new location on 16th and 4th. If they didn't believe in the product and the economic cycle, would they have built and constructed a new one here in town?
Oh, no. And they do research.
Yeah.
They do a complete market analysis before they spend that kind of money.
And that was not cheap. So, you know, lots of good stuff. But what do you have, if anything, before we pontificate some more? You had a ton of papers over there. Any other executive orders?
It was all politics.
All politics.
Yeah. And just some of Trump's phenomenal out the gate that I've never would have imagined, even though he said he was going to do it. But the amount of decisions he's made so quickly, on firing people, on putting things
rearranging
in.
People.
Do you know he just released the JFK?
I saw that
stuff. RFK, JFK, Martin Luther King.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm.
And that's a big deal because we've been looking for 50 years.
More than 50.
Yeah, to get that. That was in the 63 or something.
Well, the JFK files were slotted to be released after 50 years, and they then kept them.
Which, the fact that they did that makes it more interesting because what the heck's in there?
Right.
What could be so bad that after 50 years, we can't tell you the truth? Or at least all the truth.
Well, when you've read through all of them, please let me know.
I won't. I'll be counting on people that do it and then
taking cliff notes,
give us the highlights.
Yeah, watching the YouTube or the Instagram reel and figure out what the last
figure out what that is. But the Martin Luther King and the RFK kind of surprised me. I didn't know those were that big a deal, but apparently they are. That there might be something about those that are noteworthy that they didn't want to release.
Mm-hmm.
Because RFK was short, just a few years after JFK.
Well, I'm intrigued enough to listen. I'm not interested enough to read all of the pages, and I hope that doesn't sound crass. But
no,
they were saying something like 50,000+ documents. Now,
we're talking forklifts to pick up the documents.
I mean, if you say in excess of 50,000 documents, that's not 50,000 pages. That's 50,000. Documents.
Yeah.
Some of those documents could be 100 page, 200
page. And I'm sure some of them are of no value. I mean, stuff that we already know, but in there, somewhere hidden, is stuff they're trying to hide.
The one thing that didn't get redacted right.
Or a number, because there's so many conspiracy theories on it. And the conspiracy theories crop up of just not having information, having holes in information. But it'll be interesting to see if any of them, those conspiracy theories, have any kind of merit.
Do you ever think that's part of the design, part of the plan?
At times.
You know, if you keep it muddy and murky enough, you allow certain conspiracy things to happen, which detracts you from
At times, I think politicians actually try to produce things to create conspiracy theories because it gets them talking about something that's nonsensical
instead of focusing on
how bad we're doing our job. For instance, the birth certificate for Barack Obama. He could have cleaned that up in 2 seconds. But he'd let it stay out there and kept playing with it because he felt it made people look bad that were conspiracy theorists. So he played with it for years.
Well, they played with it, but you also know the White House had the edited document on whitehouse.gov.
Probably.
No, not probably. You go research this.
But people didn't believe it. They thought it was a doctored document.
No, it was.
Yeah.
And when I'm not trying to be that conspiracy, you can see the reports that they had the document on the White House that when you actually go into Microsoft Publisher, you could unclick the layers.
Oh, really?
And you could see the edits on the document from the PDF that the White House posted on the White House.
They didn't bother doing a new PDF of the doctored document. Look, they did it on purpose.
You're a radio and an audio guy, and you know that it's really simple to fix that. So they did it on purpose.
Yeah. So, and that's just my point. They do that stuff on purpose to keep the conspiracy nuts bouncing off walls and going crazy.
Yeah.
But it's hard to differentiate between which ones are really have merit, which ones don't. And we know there's a lot of lies out there, like UFO files. I mean, we now know from released documents that government agencies were involved in creating false UFO stories in order to discredit the UFO chasers. So filing through to decide to figure out which ones are real and which ones are not, it's kind of an interesting game.
What I'm hearing you say is, Russ, everybody should have a intellectual brain that
skepticism that
has a little bit of skepticism and asks better questions and is more tactical rather than emotional about things.
People throw conspiracy theories at me all the time. They say, "Well, this happened," and I'm like, "Well, I'm not so sure." And they think, "Well, that's why you're a rhino or something." You know what I mean? They'll just
where does it come back to calling people names one way or the other?
It just does. If you're not in the tribe, you know, they want to call you out because, you know, you don't easily go into that thing. And it's not that I'm picking, I believe or don't believe. It's just I'd like to see more documentation before I move forward with it. And
that should be okay to say, yeah. Tell me more. And if we as a society, look, if you've gotten ahead, tell me more. Teach mm-hmm. me how to do it. If I've gotten ahead and you ask me, I'll tell you what I do.
And before I started talking about the COVID vaccine and the COVID doctors, the pioneer doctors that were finding solutions with ivermectin and all that, I did tons of research. But then I get on the radio and talk about it, I get banned for life.
So how do you feel about that pardon to Fauci?
I'm okay.
Okay.
I mean, I'll accept what is, you know, I'm not going to get too crazy about it, but look, what that does is kind of like a good thing in that now he can testify and it's illegal for him to tell a fifth. He can still get caught in perjury, but he has nothing to hide. And maybe some truth will come out that we don't know. And we pretty much know it was China. We knew it was them right away. We know that the government financed a lot of that. Some of the details we don't know. Same with all Biden's family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he pardoned people that nobody even suspected were involved. He had some family members and stuff and his sister and all that stuff that he pardoned that were never in the news, never thought involved, but yet he pardoned them, which so, now it's put a target on them.
Which also leads to all of the conspiracy theory and all of the other items.
It does.
And where we started with is the simple things that I can control. A personal family budget, you know, just am I spending less than I make by a dollar, by a hundred, by a thousand, doesn't even matter. Am I spending less than I make? I can control that. I can't control what the news media is saying. I can't control what neighbors three doors down are doing, but I can control this. Well, and
it's important that you don't even worry what the neighbor three doors down says.
Well, it depends on the fireworks. I mean,
but too often we care more about the impression that we're putting out there. Like, are we driving a new car? Have a house big enough? Are my kids well dressed enough? Those kind of things versus how's my budget?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that seems to be secondary to a public impression. And sometimes we're spending, you know, thousands of dollars a month for a public impression that really in the long run
means nothing. But where did that comment come from? Is how many times have you ever heard, well, it must be nice?
Yeah.
You know, where does that statement come from? How about instead of going, well, Russ, must be nice, you have X. How about... Yeah. Dude, congratulations. How did you do that? Teach me a little bit more.
It's a culmination of hard work and dedication, you know.
And we
used to do that. We used to look at the guy on the hill and say, wow, someday if you work hard, you could be that guy. Mm-hmm. Now we just look at it and say, that evil son of a gun.
Yeah.
He's so greedy and he's Scrooge and somebody needs to bring him down, you know.
Okay, Kris Kringle, let's not do that. So, you know, again, here's the beauty. You and I can ad-lib stuff like this all day long, but we can't even do this without the men and women who are serving in the military, who have served before, generations past, centuries past. And I am still grateful and blessed. And every Friday when we do our team pipeline, I ask everybody to come up with a gratitude of something, because sometimes we just have to focus on that. I am so grateful that we have men and women who are dedicating their lives, like your son, to the service of this country, like your father, service of this country. And you say, you know what? Those guys and gals, because I get to see the income. An E3 getting in is willing to take a bullet for you and I for about 30 grand a year. And I'm pretty sure, Russ, you're not taking a bullet for 30 grand.
I hope I don't.
So, you know, again, for all of the men and women who are serving or have served or some who have paid the ultimate price and sacrifice on our behalf. Thank you very much from Mortgage One. Thank you very much from KBL Yuma. Thank you for all of this community, because we do appreciate your service. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Bye for now. Money Talk AM 560 KBLU.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.